Hi, this is Tabletop Babble, and I'm Kenny. Today, May 11th, 2022, I sat down with my friends and colleagues from a brand new TTRPG publishing company founded by Amber and myself, Cloud Curio. Amber and I are joined today by our wonderful collaborators, designer-editor Sally Tomarkin, and cartographer-artist Kyle Latino. We'll of course be diving deep into what Cloud Curio is during our discussion, but in short, we make all manner of TTRPG supplements, with an emphasis on the whimsical, quirky, dark, and strange. So if you're ready, let's table this top, Babble. Yeah.
All right, we're doing this. It's Tabletop Babble, and it's a special episode. Hi, I'm Amber. You might know me. I'm the host of the podcast.
So far, so good, Amber.
Thank you. Thank you. Today, we have a fun group of people because Kenny and I decided to create a tabletop content business about December of last year, so 2021.
Yep, that's true.
And then we decided, wow, this is a lot of work. How can just two people who also have lives and other jobs be able to start a business?
And what about the holes in my creative suite of skills?
Right. Oh, yeah, that too. No, Kenny. We had the whole creative suite covered.
Really just the time. Yeah.
No. There are major holes. Like, I can't write to save my life. So we decided to reach out to a couple other people, and one of them being Sally.
Hey.
And then Kyle.
Hello. This is the sound of my voice.
I'm going to pick on Kenny first.
Oh, come on.
Kenny, go.
That's fair. Hi, I'm Kenny. You may know me from being on the show. I've interviewed some people, including Amber for Tabletop Babble. I also make a bunch of podcasts. I'm starting my own podcast network with members of my family, basically. Me and my sister have a movie review podcast called Watching Movies. My brother and I have one about games of all kinds called The Intangibles, where we complain about how we don't get the credit we deserve. And Amber and I also have a Magic the Gathering podcast, Red Mage, Blue Mage. And in the TTRPG space, I've written a lot of things, especially Death Trap Dungeons in the past. I've done things like making treasure decks for Dungeon World. I've made a bunch of small projects over the years. And now I write, I edit, I do illustrations sometimes. Kind of all over the place.
All over, all skills. Thank you, Kenny, for that.
You are very welcome.
Let's go next to Sally. Hi, Sally.
Hey, Amber. What's up?
I'm sweating because I'm nervous about this, which I shouldn't be.
But Amber, you get to edit this, so you can, like, make it sound any way you want.
That's very true.
You can sit here and be like, and then edit it and make it sound amazing. I know that because I have a podcast, and frequently I have to request that our editor do that.
Thank you for reminding me that I could potentially make myself sound wonderful, but you know I'm not going to do that. I'm going to leave this all in. Sally, can you tell us a little bit about what you do?
Yes. I'm Sally. I am an Aries, Leo rising. I am a writer and editor and sensitivity reader. I was a journalist until a couple years ago. I decided to switch careers and do some TTRPG stuff. And I still dabble in journalism every now and again, as one does, journalism as side hustle. I'm sure we're all familiar with that. And I co-host a podcast called Oh, I Like That, where my co-host Rachel Wilkerson Miller and I talk about things we like and occasionally things we don't. We just did a very in-depth episode about Severance and, like, Black Mirror and related things.
You gotta check that one out.
Yeah, it's a good time, if I do say so myself. Many ample spoiler alerts in there. And so you've maybe seen my work published in MCDM, or you've seen my work maybe and not known it was mine because I don't have a byline, because editors, you know, don't get bylines, which is actually fine, because then when someone doesn't like something, no one knows that I was involved in it. I'm on Twitter at Sally T, and I think that's it. right? Yeah.
Also celebrating 15 years on Twitter today.
God, yeah.
Yes, again.
Oh, congratulations. You've made it.
Thank you so much.
What an achievement.
Yeah, I truly am a hollowed out husk of a human being. Today I am a husk. Yeah, I got that alert this morning and it was like completely sobering.
Good work for it.
Oh gosh, I don't even want to know how long I've been on Twitter. Are you still doing the Struggle Bus? Did that stop?
No, so the Struggle Bus was a mental health and like advice show I co-hosted from 2014 to 2020. Once the pandemic started, we were like, we're done here. We did it for like 6 months into the pandemic and we were like, okay, we're good. But you can check those archives out and listen to us give advice to people for no reason other than we anointed ourselves people who should be giving advice.
Thank you so much, Sally. And yeah. Now we will move on to Kyle.
Hello. This is me. Hi, I'm Kyle. You may know me from my YouTube, The Map Crow, where I blather about drawings and mappings and RPG design stuff that I really have no business sounding as confident as I do about. And yeah, I'm kind of on board with the Cloud Curio team to do maps and other things I am directly told to do on the Trello board. So I'm excited about that.
You excited for the Trello board or excited for the things to do?
Listen, it's like, there's just the Trello board. It is so good for me. Like as somebody who just like was even late to this very meeting, could probably stand to Trello just about everything. So yeah.
I feel that. I also like, I'm excited to use Trello, but my problem is I get bored after a bit. So I'm going to need all three of you to be like, Amber, update the Trello board. Why hasn't this been done yet? Do it. Go back to it. Stop making lists in your multitude of notebooks that you don't even look at.
Well, you know, what we need to do is start making Trello into like a place of joy. So if we hide like little cute pictures of animals in there or something like that, right? So like you never know when you're going to find an action item that is indeed just like a funny picture of a monkey.
That's a great idea. This has to happen.
Yeah. Kyle, since this was your suggestion, you're now the Trello board curator of cute, cuddly critters. That's your new title.
This is good. This is all very excellent. I expect the subsequent pay raise will be updated in my contract.
The emotional labor that you will go through is so worth the substantial pay raise.
I mean, there's such a thing as cuteness exhaustion, and you know, but I'm willing to do it because I believe in all of us, and I believe in this community.
Kyle, you've done other stuff though, not just Map Crow. Like you've been working in. Like doing maps for other things, right? Like this isn't just a personal thing you've been doing.
So probably I've been doing a lot of work for powered by Zweihänder products. So Flames of Freedom. There's a new book coming out, the Zweihänder Starter Kit box, which will be out this summer. And later this fall, there's going to be another one that I did like a big city map for that was very enjoyable. And I also have maps coming up in the Fever Knights RPG thing.
Cool.
So that's really fun.
That's awesome.
Yeah, because it's a completely different style.
Because for sure.
we're trying to make it look like old maps from like Nintendo Power.
Yeah, that's dope.
Yeah. So, and it's like, that's really how I learned how to draw. Was like tracing over like this one specific issue of Nintendo Power that had all the maps for Mega Man 3 in it.
Nice.
That's kind of what I'm up to. And then even before that, as Twitter reminded me just today, dutifully, that I had a graphic novel come out in 2020. So the Savage Beard of She-Dwarf published by Oni Press. I'm new to the map space, the TTRPG space, but I've been drawing for some time. Yeah.
Kyle, did you do the Zweihänder map for Ertol for like the Zweihänder and with like the Lockwood Forest in it and stuff?
Yes. So there's like the big area map.
Yeah.
I did the city map. The big area map, okay. Was done by Francesca. Her last name escapes me, but she is amazing, and it is quite intimidating to share a project with like one of the best map makers in the world.
In the biz. But, yeah. I only asked because I was a playtester for that whole like campaign setting.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
So I'm familiar with like the campaign and the area and stuff like that. I think there are illustrations of my PC in the book, actually, which is pretty cool.
That is super cool.
To be immortalized by a DN Mandic, that's the dream.
Yeah.
I was supposed to be like an Easter egg on the DM screen for the starter kit, but I think he chickened out. He was just like, no, I want this to look good. So he decided to leave me off.
Boo. That's terrible.
No, I adore Deanne. I used to, we used to be on like weekly calls. I miss him dearly. So,
this is the Cloud Curio crew. I love you guys both. Like, I wouldn't have had asked you guys both to join if I didn't like, one, respect your guys' work or was inspired by it, or thought you guys were, I don't know, just great people. I'm really excited to get started on our stuff, but I guess before we talk more about us and the work ahead, I guess we should talk a little bit about what Cloud Curio is. And I would really like to pass that on and pin it on Kenny, because I am terrible with words and that is my skill gap. And I would love to hear from you, Kenny, about it. And so I don't have to.
Well, you know, we all bring value in our own ways. And this is mine to be the guy the questions are directed to first. That's fine. So big level, Cloud Curio is a publishing company. We are making tabletop role-playing game supplements of varying sizes. We've got the snack-sized version, our ready-to-use cards that you can bring to the table that will have items, monsters, traps, spells, that kind of thing. Medium releases, which will be like an entire room of a dungeon, or it could be a location, or it could be a more involved plot hook, that kind of thing. And then eventually we're going to be releasing huge feast, large releases, which could be, again, all kinds of things, an adventure, a game. But importantly, we are making it system neutral, but with a focus on 5e, so you can plug it right into your 5e games. It was really important to us that they be usable for anyone running a TTRPG, and that they're usable straight away. And then the other important thing is the mood that we're trying to evoke with Cloud Curio, which is slightly dark whimsy, I think is the quick way that I've been thinking about it. How'd I do?
Great. Amazing. Way better than I could have ever done. I would have stumbled all through that. Yeah, so Cloud Curio was, I don't know, Kenny and I have always done a lot of stuff together, like creative stuff. Like one of our early like friendship stuff was when we would draw stuff. Like you would give me a prompt of like a bloodborne monster and I would have to draw what that looked like,
just based off the
based off of that. One time during a trip we wrote an entire, well, we didn't write it out, but we planned out and devised an entire like novella that was like sci-fi horror. So we always wanted to make stuff together, and like that's my primary method of friendship, is like I want to make things with people. I don't even know how we decided on this. Do you remember?
I think it came about because we were just kind of looking at what existed out in the space. And I it's that thing where you look at what other people are doing. It gets you all inspired. And also you're thinking like, I could make a kick-ass version of that. Like I could do a really good version of that. And I think then that got us talking about like, what would we want? What would we want to see?
Right. Because, yeah, we were going to do, I think, a little, not a zine, but we were going to do, like, art prompts to make weapons or items, and it was called Dungeon Digest, but we never went anywhere with it.
Yeah, it was like, that idea was just in the back of our heads for a long time, and slowly morphed into Cloud Curio.
I think it's really, I think my question is, because you've already talked about the aesthetics, you've talked about the, yeah, the kind of like, but how did you discover the niche? Like, you know, like, because I feel like there is a very, and because I've seen the art and I've, you know, I've seen the pre-launch website and everything, like there's a really specific vibe. So like, yeah, how did you go about seeking that out? Was that just like just your personality kind of like coming through, or did you, was it kind of more calculated?
I think it's a little bit of both. So Kenny, I'm going to talk it out. And then if you have anything to add, I'll, yes, please add. I feel like I'm a very calculated person. Like I like plans. I like project management, and I don't do, I like free association and like brainstorming sessions a lot. And because they do have a sort of calculated purpose, so I still have all of the pictures and photos of that brainstorming session, which might be a future Patreon content reward thing behind the scenes look. But yeah, we started putting stuff down and we just kind of had a theme bubbling up, like, and it was mostly like our media, like a media that we were drawn to. I love like beautiful existential horror, and Kenny is also kind of in that, but he leans a little bit more dark and I lean a little bit more cute. So as we were putting stuff together, like most of it was frame, like media references, wasn't it, Kenny?
Yeah, I think that's how it started. It was like, here are the things that we like. There is like an overlap here, like a very obvious one in like the horror elements. Even though like, I think in talking about it, Cloud Curio is not explicitly, this is everything, we're doing horror stuff. Like that's not what it is at all. It's more just like, yeah, the that became the cute whimsy with like potentially dark undertones, or it could be more explicit at times. But yeah, it started as just, here is a cloud of the media that we like and seeing the connections between them.
Yeah, I would say some of the media that we put down was like, obviously Bloodborne, that's a huge thing for Kenny. That's like one of his favorite video games. For me, I really like Neon Genesis Evangelion a lot, which is like, oh boy. Sally, really, are you familiar with that anime at all? It's sad. It's all very sad. not very cute whimsy, but I like that kind of like weird horror. I don't even know how to explain NGE. Like, Kyle, could you, how would you describe it?
It's a show about teens who learn to pilot robots, and there's an episode where they learn how to dance, and everyone should watch it and not ask any other questions.
No. Also, the robots are their mothers, so there's also that. Wow. It's very, very weird. I also really, really love Cardcaptor Sakura, which is like,
I was gonna say that has to be an influence.
Yes, yeah. It's a two sides of the same coin for me is NGE and Cardcaptor Sakura, which again, Sally, it's very cute anime that is like, this girl finds a magic deck of tarot cards. She has magician bloodline. She's collecting these cards to transform into her own power, magical power. And it's all themes about like being self-reliant and discovering yourself and being strong, like that strong sense of self. So I really like that. It's all very pastel-y and pink. Lots of cute frilly costumes. And so there's that. But then we also talked a little bit about Studio Ghibli kind of feel too. We also really like some of that. So,
oh, and speaking of, you mentioned NGA or NGE and Cardcaptor, and we also talked about Modica as like a really
good
sort of nexus point that gets more towards the kind of tone we're going for, right?
Man, I don't know any of these references. I probably should,
No, you're fine. I think specifically when I was telling you, Sally, I kind of left those out because that weren't really touch points for you. But we kind of also talked about Bloodborne, Annihilation, Studio Ghibli stuff. So Kenny and I both have been playing Dungeons & Dragons for a really long time. But a lot of the stuff that we really liked came from other indie stuff, right? Like Kenny mentioned Dungeon World. He wrote some stuff for that. I really like things like The Warren, which is another Powered by the Apocalypse game. And that's really what we enjoy. And that's where the system neutral approach came from. It's like, we want to be able, we want to make stuff that people are able to integrate into whatever game they want. But we also wanted to be able to give people 5e options, because I do play D&D still. And I mean, let's just say it, D&D makes money. So like, from a business perspective, I'm like, I'm sorry, but you know what? I want to be able to give people who play D&D that option as well. I don't want to exclude people from our content.
Yeah, it's also, I think it's like a touch point also for people who are new gamers or interested in gaming, or maybe play D&D but are interested in other games. I think sometimes it can be tough to understand how something would fit in, but if you're familiar with 5e and you see something and you're like, oh, I understand how this would be a magic item in 5e, that helps me understand how I could use it in a different game or a different setting. Like, you know, I think it's like a lot of big cultural products and properties, even if it's not your specific thing, it is popular enough that it's a touch point for people. And I think it's like, remains a useful reference point, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Not only that, but there's, I mean, it is difficult. I wasn't even alive when this was true of the world, but like the whole like Dungeons and Dragons came out of like fanzines for the game Diplomacy. Like, you know, the idea that Dungeons and Dragons is this, you know, giant corporate legitimate thing is, you know, relatively new in its history. And for a long time, it was completely composed of zinesters, just kind of saying, wouldn't it be cool? So in that way, Cloud Curio is positioning itself in a longer tradition of Dungeons and Dragons than we might realize.
Well, for sure. There's so many other businesses and other lucrative, you know, freelancers or indie designers who are based around D&D. I'm like, it's just I don't know. So, and again, like, I play D&D for, well, I'm still playing D&D, but I played 3.5 for like 7 years straight. So a lot of my mental reference is in D&D, but I've grown and I've branched out. And yeah, it's just like, I want to be able to give people the people the option, right? Like, that's a big thing. But one of the things that we talked about during our big brainstorm session, me and Kenny, was specifically the art direction, like what we wanted. This was more of, I think, me, a personal style coming through.
Well, you had like straight away a very clear vision of what you wanted Cloud Curio to look like aesthetically.
Yeah, I think it's because I think the artwork that you see in like Dungeons and Dragons and Kobold Press and Arcadia and all of that MCDM stuff, like, there is definitely a certain feel. It's a very painterly, very polished, and I love it. I think it's great, but like, I see it all the time now. Like, it's very prominent, and as much as I think it's good, I kind of want to see something different. And I like things that are more weathered and loose and rough and not so much. That's just my personal stuff. And I also don't see that a lot in D&D itself. I'm going to let Kyle, do you have any thoughts around that? Because you have more art word knowledge skill than I do, I think, in this regard.
I think, and this is something that I have had a lot of things to a lot of time to think about, because, like, you know, even like, I don't think so, like, Arcadia is a perfect example of like an absolutely beautiful 5e supplement that gets, like, you know, world-class digital illustrators, and, like, you know, I think there's even like some like traditional painters in there as well, that are just making the most luscious, gorgeous art ever. But where I think I fit into the scene is, my art, I feel like, lives on the table next to your own character sheet, next to your own handwriting. It's kind of more, approachable. It doesn't feel like, it feels like it's more at home with the kinds of mark making that you're actually doing at the table, is the way that I think of it. So, like, when I work traditionally and I'm covering over, you know, some ink drawings with some graphite to add some extra tooth, and then, you know, I'm bringing in all these textures and scanned images, It is to kind of bring it into synchronous with, you know, your own post-it notes and scrapbooks and stuff like that, which is, I think, very much what you're talking about, with a kind of like slightly distressed look, but also that kind of like sense of whimsy and cleanliness of execution. I don't know. I'm sound like a crazy artist right now, but that's the way I think of it.
You sound smart. I was going to say,
so smart, intelligent.
It's like you're almost framing your art as a game piece.
Oh, right? For sure.
Right.
Yeah. No. That was really interesting to hear you describe, Kyle, because I feel like I'm kind of the opposite of what Amber keeps saying, which is like, well, maybe I shouldn't say it, because maybe you're cutting it out. But Amber, I know you think of yourself as like a visual person and an artist, and that's the way you express yourself. And I am the opposite, where I don't think visually. I almost cannot, I feel like. I think I'm a very like text person and word person. And so I didn't really even know where you were going, Kyle, where you were talking about. I was like, oh yeah, I guess the Arcadia illustrations are these like really full, lush things, but what else is there? And then you described your style and I was like, oh yeah, that is a different style, and that's really cool, and I totally get it. So that's like, I'm it's very exciting to be like sharing ideas with a group of people who have a really not just varied like interests and aesthetics, but just like the way we each view our own work is so distinct. And that's really cool. That's really exciting to me.
Like in the art world, there are there's kind of a couple of different ways to think about like paintings. So a lot of traditional painting that you're going to go to like the historical, you know, wing of it is the concept of a painting as a portal. This is a window that you are looking into another kind of place. You're not supposed to acknowledge the painting aspect of it until, you know, you get the impressionist movements or the post-impressionist, like, you know, Van Gogh, the Starry Night. It is impossible to think of it as anything but a painting. You got big globs of paint. It is drawing attention to its own artifice. And that is one of the things that is so captivating about it. So that is, I think, probably one of the differences between the way I conceptualize my approach to map making versus, you know, how the cover illustrators for Wizards of the Coast are thinking about their job. They're trying to say, like, you could go here, you know, like it's like a tour guide versus the map is acknowledging the fact that it is on the table. It's a ludic marker. It is helping to draw that kind of magic circle that invites that lucery attitude, as opposed to this destination to go. It's the place where you are already.
So
that's really cool.
Would you say then that you are the Vincent Van Gogh of TTRPG cartographers?
God,
oh boy, that's like a really, really bold statement there.
I don't think that I am, but if you think I am, I'm all ears.
I'm gonna. You can put that as a testimonial from me on any site that you have.
I think this is actually a good transition point to kind of go to some sort of. I loved all of that. That felt very good talking that out. But to give some structure back to the conversation, you know, Kenny was kind enough to kind of put together a list of sort of some questions. And I'm going to kind of go through stuff that we probably haven't touched on, which is, you know, Kenny and I talked a little bit about the kind of media that we're interested in, and like what makes us excited about like that media. Sally, would you like what kinds of game media fiction like that you're drawn to?
Like that I like to consume myself versus
for yourself.
Create.
Yeah.
Or both
actually.
When I was listening to the three of you kind of talk about your style and aesthetic and influence, I was like, what's my style? What's my aesthetic? What are my influences? And I think that the common thread in the things that I like is, and this is what I like to consume and also what I like to create, I really like settings and worlds that are kind of, I would say, like extra normal, like not fantasy per se, maybe kind of sci-fi-ish, but it's like everything looks and feels really normal, but there's something really weird going on. So like, I think, you know, or, you know, so I think like a really good example would be, weirdly, I think that like Edward Scissorhands is a good example.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You know, there's just like this dude with scissors for hands and people are sort of like, yo, what's the deal with that dude? But they're also sort of like, okay, so there's scissors for hands. And I think like, you know, recency bias is definitely playing a part here, but like Severance is a really good example. So it's like, you know, not so much magic and spells and, or like aliens and colonizing outer space. It's just like the real world that we live in, but something is off. And usually the something that's off is there is a dystopia afoot. I really like dystopian things. I really enjoy just about any city, any story where a city is an important part of the storytelling. So that maybe like place generally, but particularly cities and urban areas I'm really interested in, because I think that cities are really interesting places for to think about and explore power shift, like the shifting of power balances and different kind of gatekeepers and interest groups trying to take power and influence from one another. And those are also some of my favorite stories to tell. So I guess like I'm trying to think of some examples. I mean, I also am kind of a tender-hearted person who enjoys stories about people's relationships with each other and people finding hope in themselves and in communities in really dark times. I that's like another kind of through line, which sounds really specific, but I think that that's like a big part of what I'm interested in as well.
I think from the sort of stuff that you've given to me over time for like, I've read some of Sally's stuff. I've helped like give feedback and play test some things. And one of the first things that Sally, I play tested for you was basically subclasses for political, like, it was
political intrigue campaigns.
Yeah. And I remember I accidentally created Leah Remini that who was like a, what would you call her?
She's like a whistleblower.
Yeah, whistleblower. And I was like, I absolutely love this. But then another thing that you did was like Bill's Carousel, which was a very like extra real, but I don't know where you've gone with it so far, or extra normal as you call it. But I really, really love that. That fits with Cloud Curio for me, because I think of things like The Twilight Zone, where one of the things where you were talking, one of the ones that made me think was the one, of course, the classic, like, I had all the time in the world story with the man who broke his glasses after everything exploded and he was going to read. He had a horrible wife. Like, that was the whole thing. It's like, he wanted to escape his wife and he just wanted to read his book in peace. Which is, like, such a
tale
normal
as old
thing.
As time.
Which is such a normal, like, thing, but it's set, or, you know, set in like this weird thing that ends up happening. Or like another one with that child who is sending people to the cornfield, which is also very weird and strange and what's up. So I really, I see that made all sense to me. That made all the sense, cool. Sally. So I get you.
Another reference point, just like really quickly, that's coming to mind for me too, is like The Walking Dead, but the Telltale video game. Have any of you played that? It's
no.
Like, I have to say that, like, I've never seen the TV show or read the comics, and I have no idea if it's a good representation. So I'm sorry if I'm going to totally, misrepresent the Walking Dead canon. But the video game, you know, the deal is that, like, you play this character who's just trying to, like, survive this zombification of the world. And, you know, there's not, like, it's like there are zombies and they will eat you, but there's not a ton of... We don't really learn a lot about like the monsters. There's not a whole thing about like what can they do, what can't they do. You know, it's not like what are their legendary actions or whatever. It's just like they're going to eat you, and you have to survive in the world with it's just you have to decide if you want to go it alone, if you want to be with other people, and you're, you know, scrapping along, trying to like make good choices, you know, that allow you to survive. And so again, it's like, it's just the world feels like our world, except there are zombies, you know? And I, for some reason, that really like hits a, oh, and it's also you cry like 50 times.
Oh man. The end of season one, especially, is just it is difficult.
It's brutal. And like, you know, I think that it has like a reputation among like gamers as being like this game where they pretend that you have choices, but you don't really, your choices don't really matter. But like, you're not, it's not like a simulation of real life. It's the choice is like, do you want to cry about this thing or do you want to cry about this thing? And I just find I love it.
I was going to say they're called Telltale Games. So, you know, you should know what you're getting into.
Exactly.
It's really interesting. So talk about a small world. My twin brother worked on those games and was actually director of several episodes. So we have long rambling discussions about story structure all the time. He didn't write any of them, but he was in charge of like wrangling all the cats.
I'm on my fainting couch. You have no idea. It's just like The Walking Dead, the Telltale games are like, The Walking Dead is like probably one of the most important like pieces of media to me that I've like consumed in my life, along with like, you know, I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, you know, so like, I guess that's a whole other Tabletop Babble episode.
That's
awesome.
I'm gonna pivot the question onto you, Kyle. So we heard from Sally the media that she likes to consume and create. How about you?
Since we're already thinking about video games, the number one like weird game you gotta play to understand what's going on in my noggin is Kentucky Route Zero, which Walking Dead actually gets a little cameo in one of the museums off on the side of the road there. So, Kentucky Route Zero is kind of like a magical realism game, kind of like it's got this like gothic, Southern Gothic romanticism that was written. It started coming out back in like 2011, 2012. Like right on the heels of like the first like big housing bubble, once in a lifetime economic collapse, and finished up just in time for the next once in a lifetime economic collapse. So it was kind of really interesting to see it bookended in that way. But you just play this delivery man who is looking for a house that may or may not exist. And he has to find a highway that runs through Mammoth Cave in order to get there. It is absolutely hauntingly wonderful. And the way that they play with maps and spaces and what is visual, what is textual is exactly my jam. So, I highly recommend that game.
Cool.
That's an awesome game that also is like so about things that are going on in the real world and like and how devastating they are, in a way that it's sometimes hard to grapple with things that are as devastating as like huge financial crises, because they're just so huge. And that game does such a good job of telling you a story, and it's not even just like telling you a story, it's like pulling you into the story in a really cool way.
It's similar to Telltale in the sense that you are kind of yes anding with the prepared prompts. Like instead of like telling your own story, you're improvising within this context. It's like the game is offering you kind of like the characters and location, and you're the one kind of going like you know, yes, and my character's an alcoholic, you know.
That's
like
such a good way to put it,
So there's, and in that sense, like it's something I think about. Those one of the, there's a lot of lessons that that are incompatible with video games and tabletop RPGs. But I feel like both Telltale Games and Kentucky Route Zero have a lot to say about what is just enough context to really let the player's imagination run wild. That's something I think about frequently.
Great answer.
Yeah, very good.
this question is really good, but I'm not sure if it's already been kind of covered. But this was a good one, I thought. What would you consider your signature as a creator? I can go right off the bat. Like, for me, I just draw a little goblins. That's all I do. Kenny will tell you that I like to say that I'm not a writer. I don't write. But Kenny has actually seen my writing and says, no, you can write. I don't have the focus for it. I can't sit down and just write. I get bored very easily. The thing about drawing is that things are changing colors and shape in front of my eyes, and so that makes it much more interesting for me to focus on. So a lot of stuff I do is mostly just illustrations for myself. I do commissions and other things, but goblins have been like the thing I've been drawing the most for the last 3 years. And I think most people know me as that goblin girl or that goblin person on Twitter. In fact, I've gone to conventions and no one will know me, but the minute I say, I draw the goblins and here's a sticker of it, they go, oh, I know who you are.
That's
so
awesome.
I think that makes it a very signature thing. I'm also, like, as far as creating, like, writing or, you know, just playing characters or the kind of characters I create, they tend to be, I think as people are listening to us, I think they're going to see a theme through all of us, which is that we love, inner conflict or, like, social conflict. So a lot of the stuff I like to create is also, like, a character who is going to have to deal with, like, some sort of inner conflict. So right now I've made characters who, one I played in a game with Kenny was a child illusionist who thought the world was all sparkles and candy, but he eventually over time became disillusioned and he was confronted with the badness of the world constantly and had to learn to accept that. And then right now I have a character I'm playing in a D&D game that is a wizard and he doesn't want to kill anybody, but he's in a D&D game. So he's right now struggling with the concept of, wait, is there good murder actually? Or what is murder? And it's a whole thing that I role play out almost every other session as he is very good at killing people.
I was going to say, he's just also coincidentally the most lethal member of the team.
Yeah, he is. He's killed every BBEG so far. So, so I like, but I also do wholesome. That's the thing that also cracks me up is if I have another podcast called Shapeshift, and I ran a Ryutama game, and a lot of the stuff that I've created for that game, I want to bring to Cloud Curio. So a lot of cities that I've made, a lot of NPCs, a lot of monsters and encounters I made for it, but they're all very, they lean wholesome, but also, Sally, they also lean extra normal with something just a little bit weird underneath.
That's mm-hmm. true. That's true.
Because there was a whole arc in one city where there's a bear mayor. Everybody else is humans, but the mayor is a bear. And nobody questions that. And he's also not a good mayor. He's doing stuff, undermining his family out in the woods. It's weird. It was a weird arc. But it's so that's kind of, I think. So goblins, making my PCs struggle and feel bad and wholesome, but weird underneath.
Yeah, I think that's why your pastel goblins are such a perfect encapsulation of all of your stuff.
There's something that's truly earnest about your goblins. It's not only are they just kind of wonderful eye candy to look at, but there is something that that is so immediate that just I want a giant hot dog right now. I would destroy a giant hot dog. You know, that kind of, and you know, this is something that I've played with you in a couple of games. It's you are constantly bringing yourself into this. I don't know. Do you think of yourself as experimenting mostly in escapism in your games? It seems like you're always bringing in a lot of amber into your characters.
I don't think I know how to be anything other than myself. I definitely don't really feel, if I'm in a group of people that I feel comfortable with, what you get is me. Like, Kenny probably knows more about that than I can speak on. Is what's your experience, Kenny?
Yes, I would. I would agree with your assessment. I would absolutely agree.
I mean, I can't lie. So, like, that's a whole thing.
You're an amazing role player, and you do bring stuff that is not you to the table.
Right.
But you are definitely drawn to one specific kind of character, and I think it's because it speaks to something deep within your soul.
Even Sally got that when we played the Band of Blades games together.
Right.
With my medic, who was a complete weirdo.
I loved your medic. Breath of fresh air.
You need to have some the when I play Band of Blades, like, we had to come up with jokes because the game is oppressive.
It really is. It's brutal.
It is.
But you know, you get that. I mean, this kind of emergent gallows humor is, I think, really appropriate for that kind of game too.
Okay, I talked too much about myself. It's time to move on. Who should I pick? Kyle, what's your signature? What would you say would be your signature right now?
Overthinking and over-explaining things.
Okay. And then you should just leave it at that and then not say anything more.
if you need proof, check out MapCrow YouTube, and there's just hours and hours. This is the weirdest thing. It's like when people like leave a comment on one of my videos that's like explaining how to draw trees correctly, and they'll be like, "Oh man, where can I find out more to how to draw things?" And I'm like, "I have hours at this point." It's like, you're there, you're right here.
It's happening. It's
like, just click on a thing and go check it out. It's nobody ever has to wonder what I think about things because I've already talked about it for 2 hours. So let's move on to Kenny.
Okay. Oh, he passed it. Popcorn. Kenny, it's your turn.
I think the things that go into my signature as a creator is I love outer space. I'm a sucker for anything cosmic. And I think hand in hand with that is like just cosmic, not even horror, like cosmic depression.
Cosmic sadness.
Yeah. I like to say a lot when something strikes me as like, that's very funny, like cosmically. And so I think that makes it into a lot of my characters. Anytime I play like Jackbox games with people and we do a Quiplash or something, the sad cosmic stuff about like the size of the galaxy or the distance between stars, people are like, "All right, Kenny, great. That's hilarious." So I think I like writing a lot of stuff about, I just find it fascinating too as a setting. And I've already included a few things in content we've made for Cloud Curio in that vein. But I think my other one, I was thinking about what kinds of things I like to write and I like to play with in role-playing games. And I love it when the narrative and the mechanics are exactly the same thing. So,
ludonarrative synchronous?
Yeah. That stole the words right out of my mouth. But yeah, I love when you read what this trap does and how to avoid it. And it's not telling you, you know, make this check with advantage if you've done X, Y, or Z. It's like, if you look at the eye trap as it's opening, you are blinded or petrified or whatever it is. You know what I mean? Like, I like when you feel part of it because there's not that mechanical layer between you and what's happening in the game. One of my favorite ones that Amber was a part of is she stuck her arm in a mouth trap and got it bit off. But actually, that was helpful in the game they were doing. But I like when there's not that separation between what the thing does, what the game's trying to do, and the players doing it.
I think there's a term that's emerging in the OSR space about that. It's called qualitative design, as opposed to quantitative design. So like, you know, adding numbers and stats to everything, here's the difficulty class to disarm this check, is like adding numbers, it's quantitative, and qualitative would be just like, no, just explain this if you were explaining like how to repair a bike tire. I don't need to roll dice to do this.
Is that kind of along the lines of what PBTA games always say, fiction first?
I think it is. Although, because I was thinking about how to conceptualize like what that thing is that I like. And it's not just like, say what you do and then we'll figure out mechanics afterwards. I like it when they're the same thing. That's my favorite.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
And fiction first, I think let me over-explain fiction first. it's when you say what your character does and then you decide what move you're supposed to roll, which is almost never how it works in PBTA games, because you're looking at your character sheet for the menu list of things your character can actually do. So
I can't tell you the number of times people in my Dungeon World campaign Amber was a part of that players would say, I would like to discern realities now.
There's very little. That's one of the reasons I don't seek out more PBTA games anymore. It's just because it's like there's this foundational like design principle that it kind of trips up on pretty
I think it's fine. I just think that I don't think it is actually a value of the games. It's a value of the games as the rules are written, but ask any, like you're saying, anybody who plays it, that's just not how it works.
You can't
force me to not think of my character sheet whenever now I'm doing things.
Now you're going into user experience territory.
Oh boy,
I'm not gonna talk about it. That's not
yummy,
time
yummy.
No, but we need to hear from Sally. What do you feel is your signature creator thing?
I am not sure. I think that the only thing I can really come up with right now is that a lot of what I end up creating is inspired by TV shows. You know, either because, you know, I'm watching a show and I'm like currently obsessed with it, or there's a show that got me thinking about and sometimes the show is like Parks and Rec or Party Down. You know, it's not necessarily like I'm watching Westworld and for that reason I'm creating this like incredibly complex. It's not that. It's like oftentimes an aesthetic in a show or a concept or some dinky little detail that really gets me going. So I think maybe it's that. But besides that, I'm trying to think of the things that I've like worked on and published and stuff, and I can't think of a thing they have in common besides that.
I would say the stuff I've read of yours stylistically, you really like people interactions, and this kind of goes back to what you were saying about what you take inspiration from too. People place interactions are also, I mean, it makes sense. It's what you take inspiration from. So it also just pops up everywhere in your work too.
That's a good point. Yeah. Thank you. I was hoping that someone would be like, I would have an observation, one of you too, who have seen my work. That's true. And I think that like, I'm much less interested in combat and things that aren't two people interacting with each other, two beings interacting with each other, or like beings interacting with their world. I think those are what's most interesting to me and probably in one way or another will show up in my work.
Yeah, I was going to say my experience too has been like I said, with the playtests I've done, like even Bill's Carousel was so much about like moving around a space, a campus.
So
that showed up.
Forgot about that.
Now that we kind of got an idea of everybody's backgrounds, influences, signatures, and everything, specifically for Cloud Curio coming out, do we want to talk a little bit about maybe teasing what we're doing? And that could just be Sally and Kenny, really, because I haven't really done anything yet, and Kyle hasn't gotten art briefs yet. So Sally, Kenny, do you guys want to talk about what something that you're working on that you want to tease?
Do you want me to go first?
Yes. Yeah. You want to? I feel like I just blabbed a lot.
Yeah, no problem. Not yes, and you blabbed a lot. Yes.
No, I got it. I got you. I got you.
Take the wheel here. Oh, my turn to be sweaty. So going back to the kinds of things that I like to do and I've done in the past, my origins in playing tabletop role-playing games, and especially when I started to write them, was in Death Trap Dungeons. And so I think that was a natural first place to go. And it's not a Death Trap Dungeon that I've made, but it's a room. And it's inspired by all these ridiculous old school Death Trap Dungeons where the room doesn't make sense. I guess maybe this is a potential, not really a pet peeve, but something I notice in tabletop role-playing games when people feel the need to include like the latrines and empty storerooms and like all that realistic stuff. I love it when it feels like a game show. Like, I love it when it feels like this room doesn't make sense. Why would the big bad guy make the room like this? But it's just fun. And so I'm working on a room called the Boardroom, which is basically the room itself is a board game that the players can play by moving around it and interacting with other pieces that double as monsters on the board. Funnily, I think my favorite part of working on it so far is thinking about all the potential ways that it could be used. Because like we said, it's important to us to give you this and have it be adaptable to your game. So we have a lot of suggestions of how it could be used. And one particular suggestion that's going to be more fleshed out as far as a way to just instantly put it in your game, have a character, have some motivation behind what's going on in the room.
And I'm really excited to draw that map. Because, thinking about making a dungeon map that is also a game piece that is also a game piece is exactly my kind of thing that I like to think too much about.
Everything you've talked about today, I didn't piece together how perfect that was.
And it rules. It's really cool.
I haven't got to read it yet. I will. There's a lot to do when you start a company. And I haven't got to engage with content so much. So basically it's been Sally and Kenny being the powerhouse. So Sally, do you want to talk a little bit about what you've been working on?
Yeah. So I'm working on a city. And I'll just... I don't want to like give away too much, especially because a lot of it's being worked out and you can't spoil what's not done yet. but it is inspired by, since I mentioned I like to put TV shows I'm watching into things, The Good Place and Severance and the book The City and the City. I think the biggest influence is The City and the City, which is it's a novel by China Mieville. I think that's how his name is pronounced. And it's about a city where actually two cities occupy the same physical space, but have two distinct populations. And you are prohibited, if you're a resident of one city, you are prohibited from acknowledging anything about the other city, even though you share, you share streets. Each city has a distinct population and culture, and there's this concept of unseeing. So if you accidentally perceive someone from the other city, you're meant to like unsee it. And there's this entity called the Breach that it's like kind of mysterious, and they're the ones who you will have to answer to if you don't follow these rules. So it's like, you know, and it's kind of a police procedural, the novel. And so anyway, that is to say, it's a city where there are two distinct populations that share space but are never meant to overlap. And that is what I'm working on. I'm really excited. It's called The Hollows. And hopefully it was okay that I just talked about another book while describing my own thing.
Yeah.
Do I get to draw a map for that?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So I'm gonna say, Kyle, this is like your first time getting to hear these things. Kyle, when we were building up Cloud Curio stuff, Kyle unfortunately was still in school as far as teaching, so like he had a lot of I didn't want to bother Kyle with a bunch of stuff while he's trying to focus on ending a semester. So I held off from inundating him with excitement and things happening. But Kyle, as soon as Sally told me the concept for her cities, I was like, Kyle's going to have a blast trying to figure out how to depict this and like how cool of an idea it's going to be to like basically you could probably make two. Like, yeah, it's gonna be ridiculous. I'm excited to see what you come up with, Kyle.
I'm already thinking about this, and I'm just gonna pitch it with this: 3D glasses.
Yes. Yes.
We're done.
Perfect. Good. Wrap it up. All right. Yeah. And so the stuff that, you know, I've been taking kind of a backseat, doing all like the business admin stuff with content creation, but I would like to one day. I mentioned it already. I've got a whole world of a campaign setting that I would love to mine and harvest stuff from, and eventually start making that as content. But right now my priority is just being supportive of the people on the team and making sure they're getting the things that they need to get stuff done. So, and of course Kyle has yet to work on stuff, but I'm really excited to see the collaboration come together. All right, we are done talking about Clag Curio. Now, Kenny put this in this, it's more of a team building activity, I guess, that the public gets to witness.
I wanted them to get a look into our brains.
I think they got a lot of look into our brains, but if they want to get more into our brains, I guess this is good. I guess this is a thing that Kenny used to tell me, like when he was trying to get to know people, he would always ask like maybe a hypothetical question or like a weird thing just to see what people think. So I guess now is the time. Kenny, did you have something in mind to get us started?
Yeah, I do. And we can do just one. It doesn't matter. But okay. Yes. The question is, if an alien, an advanced alien, landed and spoke with you and said, you have an opportunity right now to board this ship and I will take you, you know, to the other side of the galaxy and you'll see you will go and live in this advanced civilization. But it's a one-way trip. If you go, that's what your life is now. Would you take that opportunity?
Do I get to ask questions of the alien first?
Yeah, I suppose so.
Can I survive on that planet?
Yes.
Okay, that's very important.
And so we can assume that it isn't some sort of a trick where it's
no,
like...
No, it's not a trick.
It would be like a fine place to live.
Yes.
And can you bring anyone with you?
No, can't bring anybody.
Would I get to finish the map of Sally City first?
I guess
that's also my
that
my answer also depends on that.
If I go to this other planet, will my physiology change in any way?
I don't think so, no.
So I would still be human. I would still have a human life expectancy.
Possibly. I guess part of my thinking is you're going to this, you know, magical technological wonderland, so maybe it would. I don't know.
What's there? Like, is there anything? Do they have corn dogs? Like,
I was gonna say, do they have hot dogs? I think that's I would not answer that one, I don't think, because I think the question is asking you,
yeah,
would you take that risk to see something truly wondrous?
I as just like a buzzkill and someone who's like afraid of leaving my routine and things that I'm used to and the things that make me feel safe, like, it's gonna be a no from me. I wish I was the kind of person who would say yes immediately or would say yes after some like hard deliberation, but like, man, I would like miss my partner and my friends and my cat so much. And I think like that wondrous technological place is just gonna have to do without me.
No, that's fair.
I think thinking around the same line, it's like, you know, having kind of gone through some of the toughest years of my life recently, as I think most of us have, I'm really excited about the future and excited about the things that I have built myself and then with new friends, and abandoning that seems like just for a better iPad just doesn't seem right to me. So, yeah.
Well, and that's why I was asking all these questions, because I'm going to be the truly horrible person and be like, there is a point where I would have been like, bye, everybody.
March, like, 20th, 2020, I'm going to the technological Marvel City.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's really contingent upon, you know, how old am I when this alien comes to me? If it's like I'm 70, yeah, fuck yeah. Like I've got
that's a good
20
call.
Years left, maybe, if I'm lucky to get to 90, right? It's also contingent upon like will I get awesome, like,
space legs?
Yeah, thank you. Space apparatus that make me cool and live longer so I could experience more things. See, Kenny does this to me because I have a horrible fascination with death. I'm in therapy for it, and that's fine. I don't mind sharing it. I just want to keep experiencing things. So if the alien came to me when I was 75 and said, yeah, check it out, this is a one-way ticket, only you.
And you're going to be a cyborg when you
And you're going to be a cyborg that can still eat hot dogs. I would probably take that. But so like right now.
Philosophically, this is an afterlife question then, isn't it?
Yes.
It is, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Kind of. Damn. So yeah, so like if you, like right now, if an alien just like floated outside my window and said, yeah, come on, I would be like, no, I'm good. I kind of like what I got going on right now. Come back in 40 years.
Yeah.
So
come back, swing back around, come get me in 40 years.
Yes, exactly.
Kenny, would you do it?
I think, so I like the way that you answered
it. I will take it personally.
No, I like the way that you answered it, Sally, because I think what I want to say is, yes, I would go, because it just seems like such a, I mean, the way it's set up, of course, it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, but to see those things sounds incredible to me. But I think if you actually put me in the situation, I'd probably be like, no, I'm scared. I don't want to go.
Yeah, it's scary. It's so scary. It's a good question. The question I had in mind when I thought we were all asking one was way less philosophical. I'm glad we went with yours. It wouldn't have led to good conversation.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I think mine was very – I've been watching a lot of the YouTube channel Your Movie Sucks. And there was a four-part series about childhood trauma in media and, like, what piece of media, like, sticks within your brain as like some of this, like you saw as a child that was so scary, like it's still like not good.
Large Marge, Pee Wee's Big Adventure.
Nice, good one.
Daylights out of me.
No, you're good. This is a good answer. Mine was the Skeksis from Dark Crystal. That I could not watch the Dark Crystal as a kid. How about you two?
It's the girl who turns into a blueberry in Willy Wonka.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I still have nightmares about it.
That's honestly funny, because that's right after the boat scene, which
bother me. It was the blue. It's the body horror that I didn't enjoy.
Yeah,
for sure.
That's true. Fair. Body horror, yeah.
The transgression of the bodily envelope with blueberry juice.
It's an insult. It's an insult to my mortal frame. For me, it's the Mark Twain claymation show.
What?
Deep cut. I don't know what that is.
So they had this the Adventures of Mark Twain. I forget what it was called. It was claymation, and it's Mark Twain taking these kids on a magical adventure. There's one clip I can send you later if you want to have nightmares, where the kids enter a dark void and talk with Satan.
Oh my goodness gracious!
What?
Seen clips from this recently. Oh, yeah. This looks...
It is horrifying.
Is this the same animation house that did the California Raisins? This has...
It looks very similar, yes.
Okay. All right.
Oh, yeah, it does. Wow. Weird.
So, yeah, that's us. That's Cloud Curio, the Cloud Curio crew. We should go around and let people know where they can find us on the internet. We will start with Sally.
I am on Twitter at Sally T, and you can also go to my website, sally.gay, which has like some of my selected works of like writing and editing and sensitivity reading.
Cool. And Kenny?
You can find me at Wolfmere.
And Kyle? I don't know why I drove that out for
Kyle?
So long.
Kenny, I feel like you should spell Wolfmere.
Yeah, going to say the same thing.
V O L F M Y R. Just my way of hiding from people.
Oh, so maybe don't spell it because you don't want to.
That's fine.
You can find me at Kyle Latino on Twitter. And then my YouTube channel, MapCro, which I feel like I have plugged several times already. But yeah, you can find me there. And also, I did look it up. So Will Vinton worked on this Mark Twain thing, also creating such iconic characters as the California Raisins. So.
Wow. Talk about having a signature style.
Yeah. Yeah.
He did it. Okay.
Nightmare inducing.
I wonder if he's busy.
And you can find me, Amber, on Twitter at Rocket Orca, and my website is rocketorca.com. And Cloud Curio, which will be launching our first blog post coming out, our first small release, will be on our website, which is thecloudcurio.com. And you could also find Cloud Curio on Twitter as Cloud Curio Games. All right, everybody. Woo! We did it! First Yay. Podcast.
Yay!
All right, bye!
I'm going to...
Bye! Everyone stop talking!
Hello, it's the Amber at the end of the show, and I just want to say thank you so much for sticking around and listening to Tabletop Babble. Yes, we are still getting back into the swing of things. It's a little bit rough, but at least you now know a bit about what's been going on that's been keeping me so busy. Yes, I've been doing a lot of things for Cloud Curio. We are launching our first release on the 15th of this month, which is June. That's in 2 days of this podcast release. So if you want to check that out, go to thecloudcurio.com, where you can see all of our information and posts, and you could also sign up for our mailing list. You could also follow us on Twitter at Cloud Curio Games. That's where all the news will be coming out. And of course, you know, give us a follow at Tabletop Babble to see when episodes come out as well. I am terrible at ending things, so I don't know why I put this upon myself twice in one episode, but thank you again, and I'll see you next episode. Bye!